This show was first broadcast on Free FM, Hamilton, New Zealand's community access media organisation. For more information on our lineup of shows and the role we play in the media, visit freefm.org.nz.
To connect with Community Waikato on Free FM 89.0, you're listening to Roseanne, and I have with me in the studio today Karen and Tokanu, who are also from Community Waikato. Welcome.
Kia ora.
Kia ora to you both. We thought today would be a great opportunity just to have a chat around the Titiriti responsiveness framework that our Community Waikato advisory team, led by our kaiwhakariti, have been working on over the last 12 months. So maybe, Karen, you'd like to just start us off, a bit of a chat around how did we get here? Why was it the thinking to look at developing a framework?
Well, I think probably it started with our 2022 conference, where Kaiwhakariti Gary hosted a workshop around Te Tiriti responsiveness. And we had a huge amount of interest in that workshop. I don't know if you remember, Roseanne, but we had a full session. We probably had about 40, 50 people there.
I do remember that, we only did the one rotation of that, and yes, we were probably thinking at the time, oh, if only we maybe done a second rotation, seeing the interest that we did get.
So definitely that workshop highlighted for us as an organisation the fact that there really hasn't, or at that time, there wasn't an accessible resource for helping organisations figure out how they were going to be responsive to the commitments that Te Tiriti, obligate us to be thinking about as organisations working in the community. So that was really the beginning of it. And from there, we started thinking about, okay, so what could we do that would actually add value to organisations' efforts? So that's probably, that's the very early on sort of motivation for it.
And I suppose we also were starting to see a few service requests come in from organisations that were keen to undertake that journey. And again, for us, it was like, okay, well, how can we actually help in this space?
I think what happened was we had the workshop, and then all of a sudden these service requests started coming in, and we were like, oh my goodness, we need to think about what we can do. I think at that point we were talking about, rather than pick up individual organisations and start working with individual circumstances, what can we do that would have a greater impact across multiple organisations? And that's where we landed on some sort of self-directed, reflective assessment tool that helped people figure out, one, where they were starting from, and two, what actions they could take to be moving forward.
And obviously we had organisations, and I know this did come out in the workshop that Gary ran, around, was it because it was a compliance requirement at the time, or whether there was a real appreciation and desire to want to actually have responsiveness to the treaty?
Oh, definitely. And I think the answer to that question is yes and yes. I think that groups had motivations in both of those spaces. And I think where we got to really quickly was it couldn't just be about compliance. Mm. And actually, to be truly responsive, a motivation to comply was not going to be enough. And I think the foundation of the framework that we're working toward and that we're developing is definitely that the motivation is a desire to see real impact, and that compliance can't be the only driver.
So the framework that we've sort of developed now, and we're actually looking at doing a pilot with three organisations, but the model that we've decided to use for the framework, the ADCAR model, can you just maybe tell us a little bit about that model, maybe how we felt that, that would be a good model to use?
So the ADCAR model is just one model of change, and it was a model that I think Gary had started thinking about initially. But it was a model that seemed to resonate with us all. And basically, ADCAR is an acronym for the stages of effective change, really. And so the first day is for awareness. Like, before any change can happen, people need to be aware that there is a need for change. And once they're aware, then the D is desire. So once they're aware, then they need to desire that change to occur. And once they have the desire, that's when knowledge can come in. Mm. So quite often we start at the knowledge end of things. So we say, oh, we're going to develop a workshop, and we'll put that workshop out there, and people will come to the workshop and they'll get the knowledge and then they'll go and do stuff. And in reality, knowledge is only useful when it's mobilised. And so if you have no desire to make change, then no amount of knowledge in the world is going to bring that change about. So once we have the knowledge, then it's about growing the practical aspect of that. So we've got the knowledge, then how do we apply it? What is the ability we need to apply that in a real life circumstance? And once it's applied, then how do we reinforce it and say, well, actually, you're applying that, that's amazing. Those are the behaviours we want to see. How do we reinforce that and say, absolutely, that's what we want?
And also, I suppose it could be around reflection, it could be review, as you say, to look at, is there any tweaks that we need?
And how do we build it into our systems and processes? It needs to be reinforced by our policies, it needs to be reinforced by our structure and by the way that we do things.
I think we, we quite often articulate ourselves as practitioners of the mahi that we do. And so as we've kind of gone through this process, we've had a look at that ourselves and how that fits into probably not our organisation, but maybe as individuals, and how we are aware of te tiriti and how it fits into our life and organisations that we sit on.
And I think that's a really good point, Tokanua. We're not coming at this from we have reached a level of excellence of application that we're now going to be creating this resource and we're going to be going out and offering it to others because we're experts. I think where we've got to is we've realised that we're on a journey of change ourselves, and that we're building this path as we walk it, and we're just going to be building that alongside some other organisations. So we're actually developing it at the same time as we're applying it to ourselves, aren't we? Which is quite exciting, isn't it, Roseanne? Because that's a new and different way, I guess, from historical ways of working, is to be learning as we're doing.
Yeah, no, it is great. And also our board is really keen. You know, obviously there's that appreciation and the desire from them as well. So it's good that they're really keen to be involved as the pilot.
Yep. And I think that's where, the awareness and desire is definitely there with our organisation, I believe, with our board and with us as an operational team. And I think with our two other organisations we're hoping to work with, I think that's the question for them. Do we have the awareness, and then do we have the desire? So that'll be our starting point, won't it?
Yes, it will. And probably just picking up on what you said, Tokanu, for the majority of us, we're on a board or a trust ourselves, and we've been able to reflect on the potential stage of where each of those organisations are when it comes to looking at, working through maybe the framework themselves. Yeah. And it's quite exciting, I think, to, as you say, we're going to look to learn, to grow and develop this framework both the practitioner and hopefully the learner at the same time.
Absolutely. And I think we don't know, do we? That's the exciting part, isn't it, Tokanu? We don't know where this is going to land us once we actually start walking on that pathway.
Mm. So it's really interesting that, it's taken us probably around about 12 months, hasn't it, from when we it was actually more than 12 months. It'll be probably 18 months since the actual conference. And I know from the conference we asked for some feedback. So there was an evaluation. So it was really great to go through the feedback that we did receive. And then we sort of like, okay, well, what can we do in this space?
Yep.
And there were probably a few resources and a few organisations out there offering something, but we probably felt it wasn't quite what we felt fit with our community sector.
Yeah, and I think, and I make this comment without, it's not a criticism or a critique of other tools that are out there, but I think one of the things that was a key driver, particularly at the time of the conference, is that government contracts had, and many government contracts, had a requirement for organisations to have some form of te tiriti, or they would refer to the treaty responsiveness or policy or practice or whatever. And organisations often came at that from a contractual compliance perspective. And so the people that were out there creating these tools were creating them through that lens. So if a government department creates a tool that says, here is your assessment about how responsive you are, then it's looking at it through the compliance that they want to have in their contracts, whereas we see that we want this to be driven by the communities and the people that are being served by the organisations that we work with, right? So we're coming at it from a philosophical starting point, I think. Would that be fair to say?
Yeah, and that philosophical starting point is quite simple, and we surmise it with three letters. It's why.
Yeah, absolutely. Why are we doing this? Because it's the right thing to do. Why are we doing this? Because equity is a critical component of a just future, and that really sits at the heart of the work of community waikato, doesn't it?
Yeah, it sure does. And also too, I think, you know, where a lot of people are just sort of, oh, we have to do it, it's a tick box exercise, that compliance. In a way, I know I'm digressing, but a little bit like health and safety.
Oh, totally.
You know, when, you know, people are like, oh, we've got to do this. You know, we have to make sure we've got a health and safety plan. We're putting these policies and processes in place, rather than actually by having a health and safety plan and having all these policies and processes in place, we're looking after our people. We're ensuring that we've got a safe environment to work in. Yeah, so it's sort of that same sort of mentality.
Absolutely.
We're trying to shift the dial. Mm.
Yeah. And so if we go back to Tokano's point about why, the answer to why isn't because that complies with the law. The answer to why is because it's the right thing to do to keep people safe in the workplace. And I think, you know, the why of our te tiriti responsiveness is the because it's the right thing to do.
You know, I think if you go back and look at EDCA, or we apply EDCA to both health and safety and te tiriti responsiveness, you start with awareness instead of jumping to the desire to do it is because it's compliance. But if we strip it back and we start with awareness, we have an understanding of why we need to keep the place safe, and we have an understanding of why we respond to te tiriti and the outcomes that it delivers and the outcomes of delivered in health and safety management.
And that why is steeped in a set of values, isn't it? And it's steeped in a vision of how the world or the community will be. And it's always about people. It's always about the well-being of people and the prosperousness of people.
That doesn't suggest, though, that we could have a compliance start to our journey and not end up in a place where we are authentic in our view of the world.
I think yes, absolutely. That's a really good point. We don't necessarily finish where we start. Yep.
Yeah, no, great point. And I think on that note, we're just going to take a little break and listen to a little bit of Split Ends, and then we'll come back and just delve a little bit more into sort of, you know, what's in the framework going forward. So, yeah, we're going to have Split Ends with 6 months in a leaky boat.
I
And welcome back to Connect with Community Waikato on Free FM 89.0. You're listening to Roseanne, and I have with me in the studio Karen and Tokano, both from Community Waikato. And before the break, we were talking about the Titiriti responsiveness framework that Community Waikato's advisory team have been developing over the last 12 months. And we thought now we'll just talk a little bit more about some of the specifics in the framework itself. So Karen, do you want to just sort of start us off about where we think, you know, the starting point is?
So I think as we started to unpack what responsiveness looks like, we divided up our attention between three areas, really. And the first was governance, then operational leadership, and then service delivery. And we saw that at each level there is action that needs to occur, and naturally we start at the governance end and everything flows from there. Having said that, I think a point that Tokano made at the beginning, segment when we were talking about the background to the framework, is if you're not there yet in terms of starting with governance, it doesn't mean that you can't start. All we're saying is that we really need commitment at all of those levels, particularly at governance. And so it is. It's really about starting to think about what responsiveness looks like through each of those lenses.
Yes, and I suppose that's why, you know, with the pilot project where we're looking at ourselves plus another couple of organisations who have indicated their interest to be involved in the pilot, where it's going to be their board members plus the CEO or the general manager of those organisations coming together for the first couple of workshops that we're going to run.
Yeah. And I think that is, we won't know until we're all in the room together and we start to unpack what that looks like. How it will roll out in terms of the practical actions and activities, but it is a good place to start. If we can't have a conversation at a governance level to start with, then we're probably not ready for an overarching assessment of our organisation.
Yeah, and I think I found it was quite interesting as we were starting to go through our own journey in developing this framework, was around, in a way, we sort of got a little bit of ahead of ourselves. You know, we were trying to come up with everything that needs to be in the governance section and then the operational leadership and then in service delivery. And then we were like, actually, hold on, we need to just backtrack this a little bit and really focus in on that governance side. Yep. And then hopefully most of it should filter out from that.
Tokano, you go.
It was a natural progression, really, because what we identified as we were working through the operational leadership stuff and the service delivery is that we were just answering the same questions about governance.
True.
And so we knew that if we had that pillar, because governance should be a pillar, right?
Yeah.
It was something that the rest of the organisation could lean on going forward.
Absolutely. And that how that translated to operational leadership and down into service delivery was really dependent on the work and the thinking and the development that happened in the governance part, eh? So we couldn't predetermine what those things looked like too much until people had had an opportunity to work through the governance lens.
That's great. And so maybe we can just share a couple of the sort of assessment sort of criteria or, you know, some of the probing questions that you know, we were sort of going to be looking at when it comes to working with the boards of these three organisations, just to give our listeners a little bit of an idea of sort of, you know, what will be included in the framework once it is ready to be released.
So I guess if we start at the beginning with the governance component, the first question to be asking ourselves is around the composition of our board.
Mm.
Good and point. Who do we have sitting around the table and how diverse is that representation and what does that mean?
And just on that, the whole diversity of our boards, and that's something that sort of a lot of boards are actually looking at the moment, ensuring that they've got, you know, maybe it's diversity around gender, it may be about ethnicity, subject to the kaupapa of that organisation. Are we hearing the voice of the people that we are looking to serve? And I think this just actually just really reinforces that whole thinking.
And so some of the questions that fall out of that, of course, are, you know, do we have a board recruitment policy that talks about our desire to respond to te tiriti in a constructive way? And is there Māori voice in the design of that process and the way in which we set about recruiting? So those are a couple of those initial kind of questions that sit there.
I know that there are some questions that talk about relationships, right? And that's where a lot of, fundamentally, that's what te tiriti is. It's a partnership, it's a relationship.
Yes.
And then so what's reflective in all the type of pātai that we ask, composition of the board, if you've got Māori input, you've already done the groundwork to engage and have a relationship with Māori.
That's right.
Because you're not going to get that unless you've done that groundwork, and you'll find that a lot of those other boxes that we've kind of, with the pātai that we've put out there for you, are easier to tick because you've already had those relationships.
Absolutely, and I think we've had a lot of conversation, haven't we, about the fact that this is a relational reality, not a transactional reality, and sometimes we approach things from more of a transactional point of view, where it's sort of like we think it's a, you know, we're going to come with this and we'll give you this and you give us this, whereas we're actually saying this is about starting in the very basis of a good relationship. And that's a universal understanding, isn't it? Good relationships. So while we might put lots of lenses over it, we kind of, it's not different to a friendship or a marriage or a, you know, any kind of relationship. There are components that are common across all of those things.
Yes, and another part of the framework is that there's an assessment component to it, isn't there? We're sort of looking at, you know, like, where are you at now?
Yeah.
You know, have you got this? You know, have you thought about that? What is, you know, how would you rate, you know, sort of the relationship you currently, you know, do have? And then obviously for us, it's then looking at, okay, well, if you do, then your board or your philosophy should look a little bit like whatever it might be.
Yeah.
And then if it's not, then looking at, okay, well, here are some potential opportunities, options, solutions, whatever it might be.
Ideas of actions that you might take.
Yep. And so that you then end up with an action plan to go and work on.
I think fundamental to this is the idea that that every time an organisation is working their way through the process, they're looking at it through their own lens. So we're not looking at it through a single lens that says every organisation should have this, you know, whatever it is. So I don't know, 50% representation of Māori on their board, for example, is just a pull out of the ear kind of a criteria. But it's more about thinking about what does representation look like in the context of who we are, what we do, where we do it, and what we're all about. And so it's going to look different for different organisations. I think that goes back to what Tokanui was saying about making it authentic.
Yeah, I think the idea of an assessment can be quite scary. You know, I think we've had that experience kind of whole life, unless you were always excited about exams. I definitely wasn't.
Mm-hmm.
So the idea of you being assessed as a judgment, but it's not, right? It's an opportunity to understand where the gaps are, an opportunity to measure your growth, because hopefully you can come back in 12 months and we've seen some progress.
Yeah.
And even if you haven't, you then unpack yourself, have a look at, be reflective.
Actually, that's a really good point, Tokanui, because at one point we were talking about it being a self-reflective tool as opposed to a self-assessment tool. We had a lot of discussion about the languaging and what that means. And I think reflection is probably a really good word to use in there, isn't it? It's not about measuring in a way that finds you lacking or, you know, falling short. It's more about reflecting on how might we do this better, how might this look more authentic, or how might this improve the experiences of people.
Yeah, and it's going to, I suppose, hopefully help you so that you're not going to fail, that it's just helping you with those next small steps to where you want to go. Well, time's really flying by. We've actually only got 30 seconds to go. Any last thought from either of you two before we do finish off our show today?
Look after yourself, whānau. On my way to work, too many accidents. Look after yourself on the road. Māori ora tātou.
Cool, Karen. 10 seconds. Any thoughts from you?
No.
Okay, that's great. No words from you, Karen? That's very surprising.
That's very unusual, I know, Rosine.
All right, this is Connect with Community Waikato on Free FM 89.0.
For more episodes, use the accessmedia.nz app for iOS and Android devices, or subscribe to this podcast via Spotify, iHeartRadio, or Apple Podcasts. This Free FM podcast was brought to you with support from New Zealand On Air.